Hello and welcome. Welcome to this new episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. Today we're talking about reclaiming your identity. Reclaiming your identity is a big part of the journey of healing from mother wounds. And we're going to go into why that is, and we're going to go into four important steps to do that. As a daughter of a narcissistic mother, chances are you were never safe to experiment, explore, and develop your own identity. That's because developing your own identity would require becoming independent, growing into being your own person, trusting your intuition, and being able to set boundaries. All things that a narcissistic mother stops you from doing from the very beginning in one way or another. Growing up with a narcissistic mother can cause the child's natural development of identity to stop. She stifles it. So once you start realizing that your mother was a narcissist, in many cases you need to start from scratch. And it doesn't matter how old you are. And often this is a very challenging moment during the healing journey. And I can speak from my own personal experience in this, and also from working with many women going through this journey. There is a point when we come across this it's not an obstacle, it's just a really challenging phase of the process of healing. And I want to really, I want to talk about it and offer some clarity today. So after the clarity that comes from discovering that your mother is a narcissist or has strong narcissistic traits, after the clarity that comes from understanding the mechanisms of the patterns of her behavior and the trauma that has that you've been carrying as a result, follows a phase of confusion, follows a phase of feeling lost, of not knowing who you are anymore. So the initial phase in the healing process is like this. Clarity, you're like, yeah, I'm finally understanding, I'm finally getting what's happening around here, I'm finally seeing my mother for what she is, and that has its own challenges, but you get that boost of clarity, you start going, okay, I can join the dots of what's been happening in my life, and you think you're getting places, because you are, you actually are, but then there's this phase of complete confusion, of like, I don't know who I am anymore. Nothing seems to make sense. And this phase can be quite unsettling and uncomfortable, to say the least. You might feel like you are in a worse place than before in some ways, or that you've reached a plateau and you're not moving forward anymore. Believe me when I say that I know all of that all too well. I've been there, and not only once, I've been there many times, because as we're going through the process of healing, we go through many layers, and it's like a cyclical process. So you get moments of clarity followed by moments of confusion. You learn something new about yourself, and then you go again, and you go a layer deeper each time. So this happens many times along the process. One of my protective strategies was, and still can be, to always be in control. So being confused and not knowing what's the next step was, and still is, for me, pure torture. So I just wanted to share that. So in case you're feeling it and feeling it really strongly, I really get it. But this was true, like it was torture until I understood what was happening and why, okay? And even though I still don't find it very comfortable to be in those confusing moments, they can be fun in a way too. Once you start understanding why they're coming and you start being able to actually ride the wave, there's cool insights at the end of each one, so they become important and you start really getting that. So now when a client tells me she feels lost and confused, I celebrate it for her and with her. Not because I like to see you suffer, quite the opposite actually, but because I know that only by going through that confusion you can truly start reclaiming your identity. This phase is necessary in order to truly get into know yourself. You cannot bypass it. You cannot bypass it. If any healing technique or any process that is being promoted out there, it's promising you that you can just get there without feeling this, I don't believe it. I actually really don't. And I've tried a lot of different things. If I had found a way that could bypass it, I would share it. But I don't believe it because we're gonna see why that is. So you need to let the pretend identity fall away and crumble to find out about the real one. And what's the pretend identity? Why am I saying that you need to let go of it? Why am I so sure that you have one? It's because this pretend identity or persona, or there's lots of different words for it, it's the result of all the beliefs you picked up from your mother and your family of origin in general, often reinforced by society, plus imposed spiritual beliefs that you might have assimilated as you grew up, plus all the protective strategies you put in place to survive as you grow up, and the trauma responses. So it's like a web of a lot of different things. And it's like a mask, a persona that we wear and we put forward. And this web takes over your entire life. It has roots deepening into every aspect of your life, in how you relate with others, how you describe yourself, how you relate with your work and career, the friends that you make or that you don't make, your intimate life, all the way down to how you dress, how you talk, how you move, how you eat, everything. Absolutely everything. And I remember when the first time I was told that this was going to be the case for me, then once I realized what my mother was, and I started really realizing how much it had affected me, I was told, like, this is going to be, it has branches in, it branches out in everything in your life. And I was like, whoa. But it really only started making sense when I really started seeing that for myself. So being told is one thing, but once you're in this process, once you start working through this, and some of you might actually already go, yeah, I can get it. It really affects everything. I'm already at that point where I can recognize that. So to get to know yourself, you have to go through layers of stuff that doesn't really belong to you. And as those fall off, confusion follows. That's why that's inevitable. Because we can't, they're not just getting replaced immediately. There's a process, there's a phase where what you thought you believed, what you thought was your personality, the way you thought were right to describe yourself, all those preferences you thought you had, they're falling off, they're crumbling away because they weren't yours. They came from the outside, from people that imposed them some way or another. And so there is a phase where you're like confused, where you don't know who you are, which is uncomfortable. I get it. But if you embrace the moments of confusion, from there, the real you can start emerging, will emerge. I know that for a fact. For example, like a client recently told me she thought she hated surprises all her life. Everyone would know that about her. And now she's questioning that. And I could relate a lot because I have been the same. In my family, surprises came with a catch, an unspoken obligation to do something in return. Or sometimes they were just bad surprises, really unsafe surprises. So I was not safe. And I created a pretend identity, one that hates surprises. I made that clear with everyone, and that statement to the outside kept me safe within reason. Like everyone knows, no surprises, so I don't have to worry about that. Of course, this does not happen consciously, okay? So it's not that we wake up one morning and we go, it would be a very good strategy to tell everyone that I hate surprises, so that way I'm going to be safe. This happens subconsciously. And we start going around saying, oh, I hate surprises. I absolutely hate them. Oh, I'm that kind of person that you cannot surprise ever because, you know, I absolutely hate that. And I was truly convinced of it. So you convince yourself. It becomes part of your pretend identity. It becomes part of that so-called personality, persona that we put out into the world. But it's not actually. It's not necessarily. But very often it isn't at all. My husband and my daughters surprised me for my birthday a couple of weeks ago. What they did for the day was going to be a surprise. I had no idea where we were going. I had no idea what we were going to do. And they know this about me. They know how challenging it can be for me. And it was an incredibly enjoyable day. But I did have to breathe through an initial lock up in my body as we were going to the first place. I spoke to it. I was like, not knowing where we're going, not knowing what we're going to do. I'm not in control of today. My body is reacting to this, but like breathing through it, you know, just bringing back that feeling of safety. And this is the part, like, I was able to do that because I've been practicing for years. This is not something that, you know, if that's something that makes you really, really, really uncomfortable, I'm not suggesting that you just have to jump in and do something completely out of character just to turn your identity upside down, because that's too much, too soon, and that's a lot, and it's not advisable, and it's not helpful. But when you practice and when you move through layers, when you are actively working every day, really, in this healing process that takes a lot, however long it needs to take, you can get there. And so I could navigate the waves of tension in my body while remaining present and knowing that I was safe. And then eventually my body relaxed and I actually had a really enjoyable day, because my family wouldn't, you know, my husband and my daughters would never create surprises that actually would hurt me. And I know that. But the body needs to catch up a little bit. The nervous system needs to catch up a little bit. Another belief I had was that I hated traveling. I was so convinced of it, and it's not true anymore. And I could go on and on with the way I worked, with my passions, the house I wanted, the way I dressed, how I spoke and moved, how I related with my husband and children and so on. All of that was affected. And a lot of that has changed. Very little has remained the same during the process of healing from the mother wounds in me. Some things were turned completely upside down and others changed in more subtle ways. Okay, so not everything gets completely uprooted, but confusion was very much a part of the process, and it still is, it still comes. Moments of confusion still come. That's part of the cyclical nature of the human experience and of life in general. So they still come. I mean, it's not that one point you can say, oh, I've done all the healing, I've healed all the mother wounds, that's it, I'm done. From here on, I'm going to have clarity forevermore. That doesn't work like that. And I definitely am not there yet, but I am, I don't think that's really happening, because it's part of the human experience, going through these layers and layers and cyclically go through moments of confusions from which new insight will emerge each time. And again, it doesn't make it necessarily more comfortable, although in some ways it does, because it gives it a meaning. Okay, so although you're still uncomfortable in being confused, because certainty is something that is one of the basic needs that we have as humans, at the same time, when you can give a meaning to the confusion and the uncertainty, and you know what comes next, you don't know exactly what will come, but you know that an insight will come, that your life is going to be richer and more profound as a result of it, then that makes it more comfortable in a way. So let's have a look at how having a narcissistic mother stifles the development of your own identity. Okay, there's different mechanisms and patterns. And I'm going to name a few here because I'm sure that as I'm speaking to this, you might actually go, oh, well, my mom does this rather than that. Or, you know, it's not all of this is going to be applicable to your situation. And there's going to be more. The list can go on and on. If I'm talking to 100 women that have been through this, that have had a narcissistic mother, they all will have like their own personal input. So this is just to give you a general idea. And as always, you can reach out, ask questions to deepen the subject, and if you want to share your experience, if you feel that something I've missed maybe, or you want to clarify something, you can reach out to me via email. The email is always in the description below. So a narcissistic mother trains her daughter that setting boundaries is wrong. Okay, first thing, through shame and guilt. So when you can't set boundaries, when you're trained not to set boundaries, you don't know where you end and the rest of the world starts. There is like this, you don't have a boundary literally around yourself. So that is an integral part of identity development, knowing where your boundaries are. Then a narcissistic mother uses put downs, verbal, physical, and emotional abuse to stifle the child's ability to build confidence and self-worth. Okay, so all of this abuse stifles your natural ability. As a child, we all have this natural capacity to explore, develop, and build confidence and self-worth. You can check, there's a full episode on how a narcissistic mother destroys your confidence. If you go back on, but yeah, that was a few weeks ago. So you can go listen to that to go deeper into this point, if you want. Then a narcissistic mother repeatedly tells her daughter she's bad and faulty, therefore not able to make her own decisions independently. Following intuition is not allowed. Again, intuition, we said at the beginning, intuition is part of creating your identity because it's through your own inside wisdom that we process the experiences we have. And as children, we do that with the help of, you know, our parents, and that, and we start trusting that intuition more and more. But if our parents, if our mother just tells us, no, this is wrong, you're not able, you're totally faulty and incapable to do that, then we stop listening to that intuition, the development of identity stops, and we just follow what mommy says because that rules, okay? A narcissistic mother is pathologically envious of her child and it's in competition with her daughter and her talents. So she will either put down her talents or take credit for them. Again, you don't have your own identity because if the things that you're able to do are taken away from you, you know, like, oh, I remember being told that I was a lovely looking child and my mother would always say, oh, she takes it all after me. It's like, it's all down to her. Or I was good at riding a horse in a certain way. Well, because, you know, it's all down to me. So everything was always down to her. Nothing was a real part of me. Then a narcissistic mother's love is conditional. This is really important. So you only get loved if you do what she wants and if you agree to a certain set of criteria, which are usually always changing. So it's very unsafe and you never know when you're in. You don't have the certainty as to, okay, if I do this, she will love me. It's like confusing at best at times. So just to go a little bit deeper into this, a child has two basic needs. And this is explained really well by Dr. Gabor Mate, so you can go check him out. He has plenty of videos on this topic. So attachment and authenticity are the two basic needs. And the child will sacrifice the authenticity over the attachment in order to survive. Okay, so the attachment is more important because that's what makes you survive. If your mother refuses you or rejects you because you want to be authentic, then you don't get food, then you don't get, you know, you don't get the basic needs sorted for survival. So we're going to sacrifice the authenticity for the attachment. And you, that means you will give up developing your identity in order to survive. Okay. And so that's at the base of why we start developing pretend identities. For example, if your mother pushes that pink is your color, it's absolutely your color, she always wants to see you in pink. Maybe she dressed you in pink when you were a little child and the other kids were just like looking at you going, whoa, you're always so bloody pink. So that created a situation. You will either grow up believing that pink is your favorite color, so in order to 100% like get that love from your mother because she told you that that was the thing for you, or the other way around, you could grow up hating it, 100% never wanting to wear pink for the rest of your life. Now, this sounds like a very, very simple example, but it just makes it very clear. Both of these, so either growing up 100% thinking pink is your favorite color or that you hate pink, are pretend identities. Whether you agree by default or rebel by default, still it is not you. You haven't had the chance. You might actually really like pink, or you might actually really hate pink, or you might not give a crap about pink, but you haven't had the chance to explore that really and truly and actually really know what that is for you. Let's move on. So a narcissistic mother needs you to boast her fragile self-esteem. So we know that. That's why she's a narcissistic mother. She has a fragile self-esteem. She's been through a lot of crap herself in her life and growing up. And that's why she's behaving that way. And we understand that, but that doesn't excuse her behavior. But because she needs you for that reason, you can never be independent. She needs you to need her. She wants to be needed by you. So by criticizing your intuition and your innate capacities and talents, she keeps you dependent on her opinions. You know, I don't know, have you ever been in that situation where you want to do something and you don't know if that's the right or wrong choice and you just need to ring mom still now, like you're a full-on adult? I've been there on things that were so simple. If I look back now, it's like, really? But I used to do that. Oh, there's something and I'm going to ring my mom. Or if I'm in a situation where I'm feeling not so good, like the worst time to ring a narcissistic mother is when you are not feeling great. Because you're going to end the phone call or the meeting or the visit feeling actually worse. But still, there is that impulse to do that because she has trained you to be dependent on her opinions. And another thing that I want to mention is if your mother is a vulnerable narcissist, because there are a lot of ways that a grandiose and obvious narcissist can put you down, abuse you, and make you... they're mechanisms that are more obvious. But a vulnerable narcissist, and if you don't know what that is, there is an entire episode on 15 signs your mother is a covert narcissist. Vulnerable is the most, is like the better term for it, but that's what it is. So it's like the quiet one, the one that is more the victim type, maybe emotionally withdrawn. She seems vulnerable. That's why it's called like that. So maybe she has not put you down in an obvious way. But that, by being around her and growing around with a mother like that, she still has affected the developing of your identity. Because when we grow with a vulnerable narcissistic mother, we become hypersensitive and hypervigilant. Hypervigilant is the better word, to her emotional state, because we feel responsible for it. She tells us we're responsible for it, okay, with her behavior. So instead of developing our own identity, we develop a personality not to upset her ever. So we try to be like in a way that doesn't hurt her emotionality, that doesn't upset her. We just, that keeps mommy happy because it's so hard to, mom is never happy. So we just make it, and a child will automatically think it's her fault. It's his or her fault. It's our responsibility as children. We take it upon ourselves. It's not. It's absolutely not. It never was. But that's what a child does, because we can't fault the parents when we're that small. Again, the attachment needs are the most important. So we just sacrifice our own authenticity, and we just take it upon ourselves to make sure mommy's happy. Or you can end up making your try to make yourself as invisible as possible. So that way you are not the one that is upsetting mom, because you are like a ghost around the house. I've seen that in my family. My mother and her brother, like one is like the invisible type that just you don't even know if he's in the house or not really. Has no, like, doesn't express opinions, doesn't speak when we're at the table, does, like, it just doesn't exist. And the other one instead is more like out, because they both reacted differently to their mother, which was and is a vulnerable narcissist. So I just wanted to put that in, because very often I get that, oh no, but my mother was more this type, she was more victim, so she wasn't really. I don't think that has affected me that much. And I invite you to look into that, because it probably has. So these are a few of the dynamics that you might have experienced growing up, and that might still go on in your life right now. Because if you don't address it, if you don't have the awareness of it, if you don't do the work, they will still affect you right now. Especially in the relationship with your mother, as you relate with her, all of that is going to be reinforced constantly. So the main point is that without addressing it, all of this will affect your life today, causing you to feel all kinds of unhappy, because not being fully yourself is the biggest source of suffering for every human being. Even when you don't know you're not being yourself, there's always like a part of you that know. It might be buried deep down, but that part of you knows and feels the pain of it. And that can, that can come out in so many ways. Even all the way to physical illness. So how can we go about shifting all that and reclaiming your identity? There's four steps that I'm gonna speak to today, okay? And just again, this is just to make the process, to simplify the process. I want to say it again, this takes some time, and I'm working on it. It does. There's no way around it. We can't just say that that's just gonna happen overnight. So the first step of this healing journey always is learning about maternal narcissism. And I know you're doing that right now, and I know you've been here for a while, so you know how this works. But it is important. This step is always important. Gaining awareness on the mechanics of it supports you in realizing you're not alone in this, first and foremost, because I mean, you're not the only daughter of narcissistic mothers. I can tell you that. There's like so many women listening to this podcast every day. There were like hundreds of listens on Christmas Day, believe it or not. So that's how many are out there. And not every daughter of a narcissistic mother is listening to my podcast, because there are other sources of information. So we're so many. We're so many. You're not alone in this. And also, gaining awareness on all of this will help you understanding that there's nothing inherently wrong with you. And indeed, you're not crazy, because this is another thing that happens very often. I get a lot of emails from women that are like, oh, thank you for speaking to it, because I've been feeling like I was the crazy one up until now, but I now know I'm not. And it is true, you're not. And I get it. I have felt like that too. Feeling like I was alone in this, and I was the crazy one, because no one else seemed to realize what I was seeing. So you're not crazy. And maternal narcissism is a real thing. It really is. So that's the first step, like informing yourself more and more and more. Not to the point that you get an overload because there's no need, but to get the basics of it, that really helps. The second very important point, this and step, is to find a safe container within both one-on-one work and group work where you can be safe to begin to unravel the patterns, beliefs, protective strategies that have shaped you so far. So that pretend identity, you can only unravel that if you're in a container where you can be safe to gently explore and heal the trauma that you've been carrying. Okay, and again, this doesn't happen overnight, and it's a process that will last however long is needed. So on this point, I want to give you a side note, because it's something that has come up in the one-on-one work quite a bit, and it's impatience. Okay, impatience and wanting to have it done all at once is also a protective strategy, and I know that it's not nice to hear, but I'm gonna put it there. Because that has blocked me a lot in my own experience. Okay, I know this because I can relate quite sincerely with this. So don't, no judgment there. If you're feeling like you're one of these people that feel impatient and you just want it done all at once and you want to get there and get there now, I get you because I've been like that. And on certain things, that pattern still comes up quite strongly. So I really get you. But it is indeed a protective strategy. Impatience tells you that you want it now, okay? And you can't have it now, but you want it now. But because you can't have it all now, you don't even start. Can you see how that keeps you in the loop? And it's a protective strategy because if you say that you want it now so badly, but it's impossible to have it all now, so you're not gonna even start. You're safe because your mother is not gonna come and give out to you for something that you've started and it's not working out, or you're taking long to do, or like it comes from childhood, whatever your experience was. So it is a protective pathway, a protective strategy. Yeah, I just wanted to say that. Just, I know someone will resonate with that. I definitely have been there. And also, I want to underline again that one-on-one work and group work is essential for this. If you're trying to do all of this on your own, it's gonna be very, 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 very hard. Very hard. And I never want to say it's impossible because impossible is a word I don't use, but very hard, yes. And if you think it's gonna take a lot of time, it's gonna take even longer. So, like it as I want to remind you, this type of wounding is a relational wound, and so it needs you to engage in relationships with other women to heal it fully. Okay, you need that. It's important to start feeling safe around other women, and that's where the group work is essential. And then you need that smaller container, the one-on-one. Smaller just because of the number of people involved, not because it's less important, because that is gonna solidify and go deeper into the work that is like two things complement each other. And again, I speak from experience, it has really, both have really supported me, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that. So, third step. Understanding what a pretend identity is. I don't know, is that the first time you've ever heard this? Maybe you've heard it called persona, or referred to as the mask we wear when we are, like with others. But it's the pretend identity is also something that it's a mask you wear with yourself. It's not just a mask that you wear when you go outside and then when you're by yourself, you're a different person. Yes. Possibly you are even a different person because we can have various pretend identities. Like we can have many masks that we wear depending on the situation that we're in, but it's like all of those masks are a part of that pretend identity. Very often, there is actually not a moment when you are truly yourself because you cannot be. You don't know what that means. You've never had the chance to be truly yourself, so you don't know. How can you know what you don't know? Okay, so even when I was in the privacy of my own house, even when I was by myself, I thought I was being myself and I was being what I thought was being myself, but that wasn't. That changed a lot since I started this work as well. So the pretend identity, as we said, is the sum of beliefs, protective strategies, trauma responses, society accepted norms, imposed spiritual beliefs, and so on. None of it is yours. None of it came from you safely exploring and developing yourself through being in a relationship with your inner knowing. Being in a relationship with your inner knowing, that's very important. Okay, and again, here I want to add another side note, which is your pretend identity can shift, okay, during this process or during the course of your life into a new pretend identity, okay? So sometimes when you start realizing the patterns, okay, you start realizing your mother is a narcissist, you figure that out, you start seeing the patterns, so you've done first step, brilliant, and but then instead, like to and this often happens to bypass that uncomfortable, confusing moment. That's why I spoke to that, because that phase of confusion is so essential. But if we try to bypass that, if we don't give it enough time, okay, whatever time is needed for you, it's different for everyone. What is going to happen is that we're going to shift from one pretend identity into another one, maybe into a rebellion against your mother and everything you believed so far. You know, that can become your new identity. But that still does not reflect you. It's like the example of hating pink by default. Maybe for a portion of your life, you grew up believing that pink was your favorite color. Then you figured out that your mother imposed that on you because she's a narcissist, and you learned all of that. And now all of a sudden, you hate pink, and you're like 100%, you've burned all your pink clothes. It can have a cathartic. I'm not saying that sometimes just getting rid of stuff, that's cathartic too. But when that becomes like your new fixed identity, it's again a it's another pretend identity. It's not actually really you, okay? Because we cannot bypass the fa if you go from one certainty to the next certainty, you haven't been through confusion. You can be sure that you haven't really fully delved into who the real you is and exploring that fully, okay? Maybe another example could be you were told you were too soft and sensitive growing up, and now you go around describing yourself as a very hard person and not caring person. That's not who you are. Or I don't know, I've had example, I've met people that the mother was vegetarian and imposed that on her children, and then like the person I was talking to now, it's only meat, which I'm not judging the choice. It's that might not be their true identity, is purely a reaction, okay, to what they've witnessed. So again, this is not who you are. When you don't go through that phase of confusion, you cannot actually really fully find out who you really are. And it's just, again, we've just substituted one set of beliefs and strategies with a new set of beliefs and strategies resulting from your relationship with your mother and the trauma you've been through. Okay, so that's important to know. When we skip the confusion phase because it's too uncomfortable, we are just recreating another pretend identity. And it can be sometimes part of the process. I mean, we're going to go through that in a minute, but yeah, confusion is essential. If you skip that part, then you have to start again. Until you go through that phase of confusion, you're gonna have to start again with the process of letting go of all the beliefs, the even the new ones, and letting all that crumble. And then, so the fourth step, the key step, that's where it all comes down to. This is like essential. So the three things up until now were in preparation for this main thing. This is like the main step. And the main step, and this is the one that takes a while, because I mean, getting informed doesn't take a long time. Finding a group and a one-on-one work person to work with, that can be done. And understanding what a pretend identity is, I mean, you've already done it. That's not really a complex concept. Like a few lines, and you can have that understood. But the fourth step is the one that takes the time, okay? It's the inner exploration of your bodyverse, your body, not just as your body, but this body as the place where we get so much information about yourself, where all the trauma, the wounds are stored, but where all the wisdom is as well. Okay, it's not just body, it's like your body, your emotional world, the feelings and sensations, your energetics, all of it, exploring all of that. And feeling your emotions. That gives you a lot of information on the way you're living, on the way you're experiencing life right now. So getting in touch with your body or bodyverse and your emotions is key to get to know yourself. For example, you start asking yourself, what feels soothing for my body? And not on, you know, and we're talking here truly and deeply, not on the surface level, because when you do this work, again, you start finding surface level. Like if, you know, you think watching Netflix maybe feels soothing, but that doesn't feel soothing for your body. Actually, when you get up from the couch after hours of that, your body is stiff and yeah, you know, it doesn't feel good when you really tune into it. So that's like a surface level thing. Or, you know, getting a few extra glasses of wine feels soothing. Does it really? How is your body feeling afterwards? You know, so there's a lot of exploration that happens to not be on the surface level. But you can start being curious and ask yourself that, what feels really soothing for my body? What causes tension? You know, what experiences, what things, what statements about myself cause tension? When I state out loud that I'm some way or another, does that feel soft on my body, or does that feel like there's tension there? Where do you feel locked or tensed within your body? And when? When and where is there some opening and some softening in your body? Softness. And why, you know, get curious. Like these are just a few examples. There's so much exploration that can be done. And like most of the work actually revolves around this. Just getting in touch. We've been like, that is the channel of inner intuition that has been stifled and blocked when we were kids, in the way we were trained growing up by our mothers. So that is the communication and relationship that we're working on reopening. It's not gone, okay? It's not gone. It hasn't been destroyed in like in an irreparable way. It's there. It's just we've blocked it, okay? So by getting curious, you start getting to know the infinite range of sensations and feelings within you. And no one can know better than you. There's no one that can tell you actually what's happening inside your inner world. No one can tell you if it's right or wrong, any of it. It is what is live inside of you, and it is sacred. There are several ways, practices, and techniques that can help you with getting to know yourself, all aiming at you being in relationship with your inner knowing and wisdom, navigating the waves of confusion, again, as a place from where clarity emerges. There can't be clarity without confusion. There can't be getting to know yourself without the crumbling of the pretend identity. There can't be true joy and happiness without authenticity. And also there can't be true relationship with others without being in relationship with yourself. So all of this work, that's why this fourth step is so key, because it really affects so much in your life. Once you start working with this, everything shifts. Everything. You can look at your life and go, it's a whole big mess. Mine was. So I can relate to that if that's your experience. But when you start from this point, everything actually starts falling into place. It's like magic. And I know that, I don't know, there's a lot of people promising that this is just going to happen with a click of a finger. I'm not saying that. As I said, there's that confusion phase. There's a lot of challenging moments in the process. But it is like magic how things just fall into place. One thing that I want you to keep in mind also is that your identity is not a fixed thing, okay? It's ever changing and evolving with you as you go through life and have experiences and gain wisdom. So that's actually one very good way to spot when it is a pretend identity, is when you're stating truths about yourself that are fixed and you're unmovable on them. You know, like, I hate pink and that's just it. And no one is ever going to convince me of the opposite. There's an element of pretend identity in there. Maybe it's true that you hate pink. I'm not even arguing with that. But the amount of load that comes in and how much you need to tell that out loud and make it like a statement that is like so strong, that usually is like, it can be an alarm bell. It's like, okay, we need to look into that a little bit, okay? And there is a core that feels right and true to you in your own identity. There is that part that is like, it's ever changing and yet really grounded at the same time. It's like, it's hard to put into words. It's like, it sounds like a paradox, but it's like, it's there and it's strong and stable and solid like the earth. But as the earth, there's a lot of movement and a lot of changing happening all the time. A lot of things happen at once. So you are a multifaceted, complex, beautiful being with so much potential. And so your identity is multifaceted and it's complex. And the more you let go of the old patterns and allow your true self to emerge, the more you can experience the fullness of life. That's just it. And that concludes, I think, the episode of today. There's a lot that we spoke about. And again, if you have questions on this, if you want to elaborate, if you have an experience of your experience that you want to share with me, email me. That's always welcome. You can also comment on the actual episode. I think on some of the platforms you can do that. So feel free to do that. I just wanted to add one more thing. So we're coming towards the opening of the women's circles. So I have a starting date that I am pretty confident with. So the beginning of February. So the first week of February, I think, starts with the 5th of February. We're going to start officially with the women's circles. So if you want to apply for that and know more, you can follow the link in the description of this video. Follow the link to Women's Circle. That leads you to an application form. And when you fill that, then you also get a link to book a free intro call with me, which is essential for you to apply for the Women's Circle. But also, if you want to ask questions, if you're still unsure whether this is for you or not, up until you make the first payment, which is going to happen only after the intro call, there's no commitment. So do book that call, fill in the application, book that call, you get to chat with me, and that I can answer your questions if you have questions. And if you feel like, you're still unsure, that's a really good way to know if this is a really good fit for you or not and how it works. So do that. There's going to be also offerings for those of you in different time zones where the time of the circle won't actually work. So again, if you fill in that application form and you're unsure about the time, maybe it won't work, there's going to be another offering which will work on recordings and practices. So you're going to be able to still get a heap of benefits, even if you're not able to attend the live circles. So that's going to be there too. And yeah, I just wanted to say that because that's important. And also we're coming towards a new opening of a few spaces for the one-on-one work as well. And for that, you can email me if you're interested in the one-on-one work. Send me an email and I'll send you all the details for that. And if you have any questions again on that. So all of this is coming. And I just wanted to let you know about that because those are all the new offerings for 2024. So with that said, I'm going to let you go with a lot of love. Bye for now.